If my neighbors on both sides decide to swap out their gasoline-powered vehicles for EVs, and then the grid, you know, starts to try to catch up over the next 18 to 24 months, is there a chance that my AC and my lights could go out in between them as the supply and demand on the grid gets tighter?
Yes, that's absolutely true.
So that I should call them then. If my neighbors get EVs, I should call them and say, hey, make sure we have enough power going in the hood here?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
Hey there, happy July 4th holiday. Special episode of Yolitics. Every episode of Yolitics is special. This is a holiday special for Yolitics.
I'm glad
what are you drinking for the holiday, man? Yeah, I mean, hey, what are you drinking for the holiday, dude?
I just went with a Texas-style Bock amber lager from Community.
What kind of fruit is in that one, man?
There is no fruit in this one, so this is going to be different. It's just a lager. Just a straight-up lager.
You sip a couple of sips out of that, it's going right down the drain, bro.
How about you? What are you having?
I'm actually having one for you. This is Paleta de Mango.
Oh, yeah. I like that one.
Which I think translates to mango chili beer with lime.
Because it's written on there. Well, that doesn't really translate over because chili is nowhere in the other version there. And it's Paleta de Mango.
This is from
having to fix your Spanish.
I know you always do, man. Roaring Sons. You know what? I noticed that I only drink Four Corners and Roaring Sons all the time. But I had a friend over recently from Japan, and my beer is chock full of Japanese beer.
Oh, nice.
And I have like three Texas beers left. So I'm going to have to make the switch over to Kirin or Sapporo here for one of these episodes soon.
Whiteley, you're so worldwide. Friends just scattered all over, near and far.
But you can tell how worldly I am with my Spanish.
I know. You need to get out a little bit more, though. Yeah.
That's good.
So, you know, we heard that little snippet there a second ago.
Yeah. So that's an energy expert. We're going to get into a little more here in just a moment. But the question here is, as you're out and about for the July 4th holiday, you're having to fill up with gas. I finally just hit the $100 mark filling up with gas the other day. And wow. I almost
one tank.
Doing that. One tank. Wow. $100, $101.23. I'm like, this is insane. So the question now is, and stats bear this out, that our gas prices, the high gas prices we're seeing now, are they driving more people to look at and to consider buying electric cars? The stats say, yeah, that's actually happening.
It's interesting that you say that because I actually have something pulled up right in front of me here, and it's from.
Are these the same stats I have?
I don't know. Probably not. You probably have better ones, but this is from Car and Driver, and this comes from they're citing Experian here, which knows everything about this kind of stuff. It says that electric vehicle registrations in the U.S. shot up 60% in the first quarter of this year. They went up 60%, and you go, okay, well, how about regular vehicles? No, they say overall, new car registrations dropped 18%, but yet you see these electric vehicles shooting through the roof.
And sales of electric vehicles, according to the EIA, the Energy Institute Administration, I believe, is that what that is, Wheeler? EIA?
No, it's something else.
Yeah, it's something else, but it's this federal organization. Year-over-year sales from May of 2022, looking back to May of 2021, plug-in vehicles, EVs, electric vehicles, they're up, the sales of them are up 45.5% year-over-year. When we get the June numbers out, probably any day now, I bet we see another increase there too, because these gas prices are just insane and people are looking for relief somewhere.
Yeah, and so that's what we're talking about today. And by the way, EIA is Energy Information Administration.
And that came from our producer, not from your knowledge or from Wikipedia.
I just typed it in, actually.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
So here's the thing, though. We know that people are feeling it right now. You're feeling it, in terms of electricity at home. And this all deals with energy. You're dealing with this with electricity at home, especially if you're one of the unlucky ones having to choose a new plan right now, because it has shot up like, in some cases, like 50% since February. You're going out to fill up your car and you're finding that, like Whiteley, maybe you've hit that $100 mark on one tank. Thank goodness I haven't gotten there yet. And so you're feeling it everywhere. Maybe that's making you think of an electric car. But what is that going to mean for the grid here in Texas if everybody gets an electric car and starts plugging in? So there's a lot going on here, but let's start with gas, because I think that that's on a lot of people's minds. And we understand that there's a not so good prediction about that here in Texas, too. So on the line with us right now is an economics professor from my alma mater, the University of Houston. His name is Ed Herz. He is the energy fellow at U of H, and this guy is plugged into anything having to do with energy. Welcome to the program, Professor Herz. Let's start with gas and what your thoughts are about that.
You know, I'm thinking that we're going to see $6 gas by Labor Day. I really think that the trip to Saudi Arabia is not going to be fruitful. The rig count in the Middle East is still off by more than 25% from pre-pandemic levels. I don't think there's any excess capacity in OPEC that can be brought here. And it's not like we're friends with the Saudis. And so they're enjoying the high price as much as, you know, anybody in the Permian, and they're happy to keep it that way. The domestic refineries, though, really don't earn large margins. So we're not going to see a lot of new refinery development. The biggest one that's going in is a 250,000 barrel a day expansion at the ExxonMobil Beaumont refinery. And they only did that after they had acquired a big Permian play position, so that they could ensure that they were going to have that steady supply of lighter crude oil that they could get from the shale plays. We've lost a bunch of refineries here in the United States because it really just doesn't make a lot of sense to reinvest in them. Several have been for sale for years that nobody wants to buy. The Monroe facility that Delta has been on the market for more than 5 years. The Lyondell Basil facility in Houston has been on the market for a couple of 3 years. They're going to close it very soon. Shell closed two refineries because of storm damage. Other companies have done the same. Looking ahead, if we see a drop in demand that's coming, I can certainly, as a refinery owner, if I put myself in the place of a refinery owner, not want to make any new investments.
So high gas prices, even higher in the next couple of months and maybe staying there for a while.
Yeah, I think we can expect high gasoline prices.
The last time I talked to you, you were getting close to your electric plan expiring. A lot of people in Texas have been going through that. And they have been getting absolute sticker shock when they get on the Power to Choose site, where you can choose a different electric provider, and seeing the electricity rates, which have just skyrocketed over the last year.
That's absolutely true. I haven't pulled the trigger on one yet. You know, I'm looking at a easily 70-75% price increase. But as I've watched the price of natural gas drop a little bit because of the interruption and demand because of the explosion at the Freeport LNG facility, I'm optimistic that the price of gas will fall a little bit more, and maybe we'll have a better look at the price for the next year on electricity.
So you see natural gas going down in price over the next year, and a lot of the price of electricity is driven by natural gas because we use a lot of it for electricity here in Texas. So if somebody's in the same predicament where their plan's expiring, maybe next year looks better. Maybe you go with that year-long plan and just bite the bullet for 1 year.
Exactly. I'm thinking that the marginal cost of producing additional natural gas is not more than a dollar and a half per 1,000 cubic feet. And as we've seen in periods of time where the price has jumped considerably, eventually the producers get the rigs out in the field and bring the production to market. Plus, we have a lot more associated gas coming out of the Permian. This mm-hmm. elevated oil price has really driven new production, new drilling activity across the U.S. It's not as fast as it could have been. There's a lack of steel due to supply chain issues, and And it's certainly more costly to drill these wells, but we are seeing increased activity week in, week out.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with choosing that electric plan there, Ed.
Well, everyone out in the Permian Basin out in West Texas wants to make money off this this expensive oil and gas. Have the Rolls-Royce dealerships reopened in Midland like they do every cycle?
I haven't been out there. Okay. You know, the one place I go is boom and bust, agnostic. Yeah, Bob's Better Burgers. That's the place to be.
Okay. Well, listen, Wheeler mentioned this, and I thought it was a great idea for a podcast about how, you know, there's this big push to get more people in electric vehicles. And when you see the price of gasoline, it's like, wow, do I want to, you know, make that trip to the store? Do I want to wait a week and have everything ready to go and run 10 errands at once? But Wheeler said he was talking to you, Ed, and you mentioned that, you know what, you can bring on as many electric cars as you want and you know, try to charge them up. The Texas electric grid is just not ready for this yet. Is that the case?
Yeah, there's certainly some truth to this. The grid is also a mechanical device. The transformers, the substations, require cooling. The transformers do. They sit in a bath of mineral oil all day long.
That sounds like Wheeler. It sounds like Wheeler's day too, sitting in the bath of mineral oil. But go ahead.
Well, and our for example, our transformer in the backyard blows up almost every 18 months routinely. Somebody's plugged in one more phone and it just kicks off. The air conditioning got reset. And it can happen any time of year. As we go to more and more level demand throughout the day, this equipment needs to be changed out. It needs to be upgraded because it's designed to cycle up to hot and then cool off at some point during the day. Failing to do that, keeping it running at a high boil, is just going to lead to more fatigue and a rapid decline.
Well, break that down for us. Are we talking about specifically substations? We're talking about transmission lines need to be upgraded. Electrical producers need to produce more electricity. What specifically needs to be tweaked or added to in order to have me and Wheeler go out and buy an electric car?
Really, it's going to be the infrastructure. You know, first of all, yeah, your house is likely going to require an upgrade in service. If everyone on our street were to add an electric vehicle, trade out one of the gasoline-fired cars that they have for an electric vehicle, that would add additional load during the night. That would probably work really well for the generation profile that we have in Texas with a high wind contribution overnight. And it would, of course, level out demand for the rest of the generators across the grid. That actually could be beneficial. And as we add this demand to the grid, it would, of course, increase the price that everybody pays.
When do you think this might be ready, Ed? Because with $5 a gallon gas, I got to tell you, electric cars seem a lot more appealing to me right now. When will Texas be up and ready for more EVs on the road?
Well, I don't know. I think it's not an urgent matter just yet, because everybody who's making an electric vehicle is selling all they can. Tesla, Ford, General Motors, Toyota stumbled a bit. But as we see that develop, it's a 100,000 here, 200,000 there. We're not quite up to making a significant dent in the nation's fleet. The average life of a car in the U.S. is about 12 years. So if I can't imagine that we're going to have a wholesale change in the composition of the fleet in 5 years' time, but maybe over 8 to 10 years, we could see this transition really developing and gaining an awful lot of momentum.
So, Ed, I'm curious. It's almost like there's a race going on here. We know that car makers have had a real struggle putting out enough vehicles just because of supply chain issues. So that has slowed things down. But, you know, what if they really kick into gear? We know that GM has been very aggressive in trying to get electric vehicles to market. Tesla, of course, based here in Texas now, is looking to ramp things up. What if they really start cranking these cars out? You know, and Ford, my goodness, the F-150 Lightning, that's going to be hugely popular here in Texas. What if they really start to crank these things out? How fast can this grid get up to speed here to be able to handle a great influx of electric cars? I mean, is that transformer behind your house going to be in some trouble again if you have, you know, three more neighbors who decide to get
one? I'm sure I'll have a new transformer before they do. You know, this is a great question. And who's going to pay for it? Is it going to be the consumer or the taxpayer? You know, currently, the taxpayer is going to install a bunch of charging stations around the state. And that's a great idea. You don't have to go to, you know, the Collins Street Bakery in Corsicana and hook up where there are four or five different charging stations. Actually, each one set for a different manufacturer. The Ford Lightning, I think they're planning to build 200,000 units of these. That's outstanding, but they still have the bulk of their fleet are these things that run at 14, 15 miles per gallon. You know, ouch. That transition has to happen first. And Tesla, for example, is unable to really ramp up their production in Texas because they don't have access to the battery materials that they require. And so the cars in Texas, the cars that they're making in California, actually right now are have different battery configurations. That supply chain is critical to getting the electric vehicles onto the market. And my expectation is that the grid development, the grid repurposing, if you will, or renovation, can happen in arrears of the cars going on the market, as opposed to trying to get out in front. Electric vehicles have made sense on a pennies per mile basis for more than 10 years. The only challenge for the consumer has been the idea of range. For anyone driving from here to downtown, one charge should take you through 2 weeks. Yeah. A hurricane evacuation is something different.
Yeah, indeed. So, well, let me ask you. You said that the grid could catch up later on to EVs, if I heard you right. If my neighbors on both sides decide to swap out their gasoline-powered vehicles for EVs, and then the grid, you know, starts to try to catch up over the next 18 to 24 months, is there a chance that my AC and my lights could go out in between them as the supply and demand on the grid gets tighter?
Yes, that's absolutely true. I don't know who your local distribution company is. Is it Encore?
It's Encore, yeah.
Encore. Yeah. So Encore in the city is a regulated utility. And they get a regulated rate of return, a cost of service return. You know, for them, it makes sense to get in front of this and begin the investment to start putting out the new transformers, to upgrade the substations, to be planning ahead, because essentially they can spend this capital and always make sure that they're going to be able to get a rate of return. Calling them up and saying, hey, my two neighbors have put in four electric vehicles and everything drags in the middle of the night, they are duty bound and contractually bound to come out and fix that local distribution area.
So that I should call them then. If my neighbors get EVs, I should call them and say, hey, make sure we have enough power going in the hood here.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. We've had issues with new houses being built in the neighborhood. And having been an electronic shop in high school, I could go out and check the voltage and the frequency. And it was, we got down to 108 volts and the frequency was dropping below 59 hertz, which indicates there's a challenge. And eventually we lost one of the three phases across the neighborhood. That burned out some appliances. Center Point wound up having to replace the appliances, and upgrade the delivery system to the neighborhood. I think that's what we're going to see. And this is all going to fall on Encore. It'll fall on CenterPoint, Austin City, CPS in San Antonio. And then that'll aggregate up to requiring more supply from the ERCOT grid.
We need you as a neighbor, Ed.
That's what I was going to
go ahead, Wheeler.
That's what I was going to ask you, though, Ed, is, you know, okay, so great. They, you know, they upgrade the stuff around your house. Will there be enough power, though, too? You know, I think there's a lot of power, electricity insecurity here in Texas because of what happened in February of 2021. And we've had a couple of scares since then. Is there enough to go around, you know, let's say that, you know, if people do start adopting electric vehicles, which, as you say, are a much better, more efficient deal than driving a gasoline car and have been for years, you know, and then there's the environmental aspect of it. A lot of people have been adopting it for that. Will there be enough electricity to go around, though, to power all of these if you do get that local infrastructure?
Right now, we couldn't handle it. We're too tight. The dispatchable fleet of generators, the natural gas, the coal, the nukes, and the small amount of hydro that we have in Texas is less than it was 12 years ago. It's less than it was this time last year. And the economy keeps growing. Wind generation has really picked up. We have the largest wind fleet in the nation and one of the largest ones in the world. Solar has stepped up tremendously this year, generating as much as 10,000 megawatts on a, you know, one of these afternoons that we've already had. But still, that puts us really tight at the peak demand of 77,000 gigawatts, 77,000 megawatts at 4:30 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We're getting 13 to 15,000 off of the top for the wind and solar, because that's when the wind tends to die down. And the rest is our legacy fleet. And the legacy fleet has suffered from a lack of investment, a lack of reinvestment, and the fact that most of the year, these units aren't running and aren't needed. So the owner really has not been making any return on capital. Those plants are going to continue to leave the ERCOT grid.
So would people be told then, like if there were a lot of people who adopted electric vehicles, would they be told like, hey, plug in from this time to this time, don't plug in late in the afternoon? I mean, is there going to be like a schedule eventually as we see more and more adoption?
I expect something like that, a rationing, if you will. And certainly we've seen some initiatives in Texas with that. You know, we'll give you cheaper rates if you run your dishwasher after 10 p.m. Please don't leave your air conditioning on during the middle of the day.
Ed, I don't like paying $5 a gallon for gas, but you're not selling me an electric car here too, if there might be rationing if we all start buying these things. What should we expect if, you know, we're in a jam here and want to start looking at electric vehicles? Is it going to be worthwhile investment?
Oh, yes. I think they're going to be worthwhile investments. Given the appropriate profit motive, we're going to see more generators get to the grid. The Public Utility Commission and ERCOT need to work together to fix this market model that we have. And it's not a market. It's an administrative construction. Anything that requires, 1,800 pages to... as a rule book of regulations.
Right.
That's not a market. You know, a market is an unregulated market. A free competitive market might be the one for dietary supplements that we see on late night TV.
I want to ask you, Ed, because you touched on these charging stations and not having to make it all the way up to the Collins Street Bakery to plug your car in if you're heading this way. We had the big infrastructure bill that was passed last year in D.C. Every Texas Republican in Congress voting against it, every Texas Democrat voting for it. In the end, there were enough Republicans overall who joined in and pushed this across the finish line with Democrats. Texas stands to get, 408 million dollars to put in these charging stations. They want to put these like every 50 miles on the interstate. And so that plan is underway over the next 5 years. How much is that going to increase electric vehicle adoption? Because like you say, if you have to run from a hurricane, right now you're thinking, I don't know if I get the electric vehicle. Is it going to get me all the way to where I need to go? If you know that there's a charging station every 50 miles at least, then you're much more likely to go, yeah, it's time to pull the trigger and get this electric vehicle. How much is that going to increase adoption to have these charging stations?
Yeah, I think it's going to go a long way towards doing that. But remember, I'm an economist and not a psychologist. So this is an issue of consumer behavior. And when is this consumer going to be comfortable enough to go ahead and take the plunge? Living in Galveston or in Corpus, maybe the right thing is to have one EV and the other gasoline, just for that circumstance.
I think Jason does keep his EV at his vacation home too, so he may have that situation.
The solar panels outside to basically keep it charged and not need the fast charge.
Here, I want to follow up something Jason just asked, Ed, because he's asking about the $7.5 billion infrastructure plan. Texas gets the most money of any state out there because we have the most roadways. But is this federal plan getting ahead of itself? If they start, building these charging stations every 50 miles and the grid can't handle it?
No, I don't think so. And this is what the federal government has done for decades. Provide the infrastructure, build it, and they will come. The Eisenhower Interstate System was perceived as, oh my goodness, we don't need this. This is just a make work type of thing. And Eisenhower had spent more than 3 weeks in a military convoy going from San Diego to Washington in the 20s. And he knew how miserable that was to try and do. And now, with the interstates, we found, wow, this is really pretty cool. We use subsidies for air flight, for mail deliveries. That helped build civil aviation across the nation. The flat screens that we're using today all really came out of technology that was developed for the Department of Defense. And so a lot of what we see developing years in advance of full adoption really gets a chance to play out. And I think, getting the 400 odd million for Texas is a great thing. As you pointed out, I don't think many of the Texas Republicans voted for it, but they sure have taken credit for it. Senator Cruz, Senator Cornyn, all happy to have brought home the bacon to the state.
The politics of federal money coming down to the state level is always interesting. So, Ed, if the federal government gets out in front of this, puts in these charging stations, people start adopting, more of these electric vehicles. And in addition to that, like you said, the Texas economy has just been going gangbusters and has been growing like crazy. But we haven't seen a lot more electric generation coming online. Will this sort of force that to happen? Is that a likelihood that we'll actually see new power plants here in Texas start to kick in and be?
No, we won't. Not until the Public Utility Commission and ERCOT and maybe the legislature change the way our grid is managed.
What if they don't, though, Ed? Can that be sustained? Can this kind of growth be sustained without some kind of new generation coming online?
I don't think so. Yeah, we're going to have more wind generation join the grid. We're going to have more solar join the grid. If we don't have battery capacity and extended battery stations installed across the state, we're going to be short for the foreseeable future.
And what does that mean? These brownouts, these blackouts, these set your thermostat at 77, we can't handle it. Are we in for a lot more of that if we don't get some new stations
online? I think so. We're in a situation where Wall Street is not going to invest in building new dispatchable generation in Texas, period. It's not there. The legislature, the PUC, the governor, they all rejected offers by Starwood and by Berkshire Hathaway Energy to add natural gas-fired generation units to our grid Berkshire Hathaway offered 9 megawatts of installed power with dual fuel opportunities, so that we could get out of a black start situation. You know, we still haven't addressed the black start issue across the grid here. And
the black start issue, too, just for our listeners, because this is important, is if the grid goes down, restarting the grid from scratch.
Exactly. If the entire grid is de-energized, how do we get it back up?
Yeah.
And, this is a problem that happens in other grids around the nation. You know, the tree limb in Cleveland that knocked out the Atlantic seaboard, but they were back up in 48 hours. You know, the poor guy in Arizona who flipped the wrong switch caused a surge across Southern California and Arizona. Their grid went out, but they were back in 24 hours. And as we know from the testimony in February 2021, we don't have that capability here. And
well, it sounds like listening to you, that the state needs to get cracking on this, but that it hasn't happened. Professor Herz, how long does it take to build one of these if you decided today, like, yeah, let's go ahead and do that?
Well, for a natural gas fired unit, probably 18 months, siting it, putting it in a place where there's already infrastructure, perhaps a substation where there's an old coal plant or switching units. The gas fired units are really pretty simple.
How are we going to be paying for this then when they update the grid here in Texas? How are we paying
for the local grid for you with your wire and your neighbors? You're going to pay for that. It's going to be spread across the entire community of Dallas or Houston.
So like a little surcharge on your bill.
Exactly.
I wouldn't say little, Wheeler. I wouldn't say little, though.
it's probably not little.
Thinking back to the early days of cable TV in Texas, Warner would call up and say, "Hey, you know, we can run a line to your house. It'll only cost you $2,500 to drop it off the pole." But once they had enough people in the neighborhood to do that, then they would hook you up for free because somebody had already paid for that wire to be there.
Ed, my last question, after, you know, hearing from you about what things are like now, I'm curious what you think this whole situation is going to look like 10 years from now, 2032.
I'm looking ahead and thinking that we're going to have at least half of the fleet in the United States either hybrid electric or electric.
Half of the fleet? Wow. I mean, it's less than 1% now in Texas?
Yes, because as we're going ahead, we've got about 3 billion people around the world who would like to join the 21st century and have reliable electricity, reliable transportation, reliable petroleum products. You know, they're not all going to get F-150s, but that's going to bid the price of hydrocarbons up and continue to do so. And couple that with the environmental pressures that we have to reduce emissions, I think it's going to push us more and more into the innovative side of electric vehicles and the hybrid vehicles, which we have. And so I think we're going to see a rate of adoption for electric vehicles really just jump dramatically here very soon.
Ed, going to Jason's point there, so you see so much more electric vehicle adoption in the 10 years ahead. The cars are already at an amazing point with what they can do. But 10 years ahead, what do you see as far as the grid here in Texas? How is that looking? Is it pretty?
Well, I think it has to be better. We have to recognize there needs to be an investment. It's either going to come out of the consumer's pocket or the taxpayer's pocket. Everybody in Austin knows that with an expanding economy, with an expanding population, this grid needs to be moving. And the only way we can get there is if there's an investment incentive for generators and transmission companies and the local distribution companies to provide the new equipment that's required.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us, Professor Herz. Really appreciate it.
Jason, thank you so much.
Okay, so there was a lot there. So Jason, I don't know if you're sold yet on an EV here, but you know, maybe it is something for you to start thinking about, that $100 a tank gas that you've been dealing with here. Hopefully your electric plan is all nailed down right now, at least.
I'm getting closer to a bus pass right now, man. I mean, this is insane because, you know, the electric prices that he's talking about are going up. I still don't think it would be as much to charge an electric vehicle as it is to fill up your tank once a week.
Right.
But that's just what the numbers show right now.
But I'll tell you, you're probably going to get that electric vehicle, at least, you know, according to what he's saying about adoption of EVs. Just shooting through the roof, he thinks, in the years ahead here, not too far from now, that most of us, or a lot of us, are going to be driving electric vehicles. And that makes sense because you see these humongous automakers. GM has poured tons of money into this. Ford is really coming at this hard with that new F-150. Tesla isn't going anywhere. I mean, these are coming on. Just wait, Jason. Wait till they actually start getting enough computer chips to build these cars again. Right. And this is just going to explode.
Here's my problem with electric vehicles, though. The F-150 is a good-looking truck.
Yeah.
The Tesla is pretty sharp, the sedans that are out there. But for the most part, these vehicles don't really look that sharp to me.
There was a sports car or a luxury car maker, and I'm trying to remember which one it is.
See, I don't shop in your circles is the difference here. Shop in your circles.
Well, neither
was that
do
the
I.
Rolls, the 2023 Rolls Royce you were looking at the other day?
I don't shop in my circles either. This was a commercial I saw the other day, and I was like, okay, now that car I would buy, but it was like a gazillion dollars. And I have driven a Rolls Royce before, by the way. It wasn't an electric.
Again,
either.
It doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised you weren't sitting in the back seat of the Rolls Royce. But you know, back to the point here too. Car makers make these cars look like, oh, they're from the future. You know, there's a BMW, and I hope none of our listeners have one of these BMWs. But it's a little small, smart car size BMW, and it's like blue, black, and white, and it's like supposed to be out of the future. Like just make it look like a car.
Just make it look like a regular car. And
a regular old car that people are buying every day, and I will drive the thing. I don't care how it's powered. Preferably, it's powered with something that's affordable, but just make it look normal. I don't need one of these crazy looking vehicles.
I'm telling you, I need to find whichever car that was in the commercial the other day. You're going to want this car, Jason. It looked like a regular car, but like a really nice one. So I think they're figuring that out. I think that, you know, these big automakers, they know what people want. They're pulling people in for focus groups and stuff. They know.
Before we get to our next guest, how are you doing on that beer there, Jason?
It's good. I like a good amber lager. Yeah. How is your paleta de mango?
The paleta de mango is mango. It's good stuff here.
So
let me hit another swig of that. But let's get into our next guest here, because this doesn't happen very often. We don't get someone of this magnitude on. I got an email the other day from the White House, and they said, hey, would you like to interview the U.S. Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm? She is, of course, the former governor of Michigan. I said, heck yeah, we'd like to talk to her. She said, you know, the White House said, well, great, because there are a number of things happening in Texas that she can address. She can talk about, you know, President Biden's infrastructure law that was signed into law last November, how here we are 7 or 8 months later, there's already new investment in Texas because of that. Specifically, around electric vehicles. There's a place in Grand Prairie in North Texas in Dallas County. It's called Siemens. We've all heard of Siemens, the German company, and it is manufacturing chargers for electric vehicles here. Well, because of the infrastructure bill, they've gotten a lot of new investment, hundreds of millions of dollars of new investment to really ramp up production of these electric vehicle chargers. It's something the administration clearly wants to talk about. Something they probably don't want to talk about as much, especially going into the midterms, is the price of gas. Mm-hmm. So we talked about all this stuff with her. Are we headed for $6 a gallon gasoline like Ed Hers just predicted there a few moments ago? How big of a deal are electric cars now? Are more people driving towards them because of the high price of gas? We had a good conversation with her from the White House the other day. Madam Secretary, welcome to the program. 7 months after the infrastructure bill was passed and signed into law, we're now seeing private investment in electric cars and charging stations in Texas and across the country as well, too. I'm curious how you think this state, Texas, the largest energy producer in the country, how it stands to benefit.
oh my goodness, in so many ways from that bipartisan infrastructure law. But if you just look at charging stations, for example, I mean, Texas is obviously very large. There's a lot of areas of Texas along the corridors, the transportation corridors that don't have charging. And so Texas is going to get a significant amount of money for charging stations to be able to fill in the gaps where the private sector is not, where it's not working for them. And similarly, in a whole array of other areas, that bipartisan infrastructure law is definitely going to benefit Texas. There's not just the broadband and all of that,
right.
but we've got from the Department of Energy, we are investing through that bipartisan infrastructure law, $62 billion across the country for next generation technologies like clean hydrogen, which is a subject area that I know many in Texas on the private sector are very interested in, creating hydrogen hubs, for example, or carbon capture and sequestration to make sure that we sequester CO2 from heavily carbonized industries that are emitting a lot of carbon. So there's a lot to love in that bipartisan infrastructure law.
Indeed. So I'm curious about, everyone's talking about high gas prices. Do you think high gas prices might be forcing this country to transition to electric vehicles faster than the country's grids can even, withstand?
I think that a lot has to happen all at once. So we've got, there have been some reports of demand lessening for gasoline. People are making decisions, of course, that benefit their own personal situation in terms of their wallets. But we also know that we need to expand the capacity of the grid, and we need to expand the ability to manufacture electric vehicles. And we also know that if people are fortunate enough to be able to get an electric vehicle, and now there's a wait list for many models, but if they are fortunate enough to do that, then they end up saving thousands of dollars per year just on the operation and maintenance, as you can imagine, because plugging in your vehicle is much, much, much cheaper than obviously going to the gas station.
Well, we've had your colleague, the Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, on our program before, and talking about the infrastructure bill, how Texas would stand to gain more than any other state in the country as far as these network of charging stations every 50 miles or so, but just because we have so many roadways here. But experts have told us the Texas grid is not yet ready to handle everyone who wants to plug in their electric vehicle. How concerned are you that Texas's infrastructure might delay this rollout?
Well, I do think that it's not just Texas. Every state is going through the same assessment, and that, you know, it's not a light switch that you flip on, right? It is going to happen over time. But ERCOT and the Texas grid, they have to evaluate what they see as demand. And in many cases, in a lot of utilities are seeing the electrification of the vehicles as an opportunity to provide resilience to the grid, because what you're doing, of course, is adding batteries and energy storage onto the grid as well as using the grid when you're charging. So if you can sell electrons back and forth from the grid using those batteries, that's a huge opportunity. I mean, in fact, Tesla, which just moved to Texas, has a deal now with PG&E in California to do just that, to create a virtual electric grid, which will provide resiliency and redundancy to be able to allow for more charging to happen.
And I know the administration has this bold goal of getting half of all the electric vehicles sold by 2030, the end of the decade here, to be electric. But I'm just curious in the conversation here with you, whether you think that the infrastructure is ready for all that. It seems like a lot of things have to happen in the next 8 years.
No, for sure. A lot of things do. It's a really good point. And that's why in that bipartisan infrastructure law, there's a huge amount of money for the grid to make sure that we provide both resiliency and we add capacity to the grid to be able to take on that additional pull from vehicles. So there is no doubt that a lot has to happen. We've got 8 years before we get to that 2030. We know that the auto industry believes that they can get to the selling of those vehicles, but we have to make sure, because a lot of charging is done at night. So we want to make sure that workplaces have charging so that there's not a significant pull on the grid. But on the other hand, if a lot of charging is done at night after people go to bed, that's a nice way to balance the grid. So all of that are what the utilities are taking into account, as well as those who are manufacturing the vehicles, and certainly as well as the consumers who are contemplating buying.
Before we let you go, I want to ask about gas prices. Do you expect we'll see $6 a gallon gas prices on average this year?
I don't think so this year. Let me tell you why. Energy Information Administration, which is an objective entity that evaluates and projects what the cost of gas will be, says, now again, all caveats, because oil is traded on a global market and anything can happen, right, on a global market. But if things go as they are, they're projecting that the price on average across the country of gasoline will be about $4.37 by the end of the third quarter. Now, we are going to see some continued upward pressure during the driving season. This is why the president has called for Congress to have a gas tax holiday during the summer. It's why he's calling for states to do the same, to remove the gas tax so that people can drive without it. It's still going to be high, right. No doubt about it. But we want to do everything we possibly can to even it out, even as we know global events are impacting the upward pressure on prices.
We're almost out of time, but I'm curious about the gas tax holiday. We've seen the headlines, but is that actually going to happen? Do you think there are votes to actually make this happen?
Well, there are a lot of votes. The question is there a majority of votes? And, when the president called for this, he noted that there are a number of Democrats and Republicans who have called for this in the past when the price wasn't as high as it is right now. So we're hopeful. I know that the teams are working. I hope that partisan issues won't prevent people from voting for something that would relieve people's pain at the pump.
Madam Secretary, thank you for the time.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. So while I was talking to the Secretary of Energy there, I think Wheeler was texting his agent back and forth, or his broker. I'm not sure which one. And he got the name of this expensive vehicle. Jason, enlighten us here. All right.
I didn't get the name of it yet. You're going to be disappointed. I'm telling you, it was a Porsche or it was a Jaguar. Or some people say Jaguar, but I think it was a Porsche or a Jaguar. And I was just spellbound looking at this car thinking, that's the next one. I'm getting that next. And it had all these bells and whistles and it was all electric. It was great.
Ferrari you have, though, is nice right now. I wouldn't trade that in for one of these.
It's costing me too much in gas.
Reminds me, a few years ago, just real quick, I always loved this ad and it's always stuck with me. I've never owned a Jaguar. They're nice vehicles. But it was an ad about the brand new Jaguar X-Type. It said, Membership starts from $45,000. Membership. I'm like, that's marketing right there.
It makes it sound exclusive.
You're not a car owner. You're a member.
You're a member of a very exclusive club. It makes you feel better. This will make you feel better as well. What I was actually looking up there when you saw me working here on Zoom was gas prices around the world, because sometimes it helps when you're really suffering when you're paying for gas to know that we actually fall on the good end of the spectrum in some ways. Hong Kong right now, they're paying almost $11.45 per gallon. Norway, $10. Finland, $10. Iceland, $9 and 8 cents, or $9. 11 cents. Hold on. No, that is $11 a gallon, $10 a gallon, $9 a gallon, $8
a gallon.
That
lager's pretty tough on you, huh? You're not used to drinking beer.
Kind of strong there, yeah. But what I'm saying here is you just look through the rest of the world, and a lot of people are already at six and well above six. Hard to believe that we actually have it better than a lot of other places right now.
Yeah, politically speaking, that doesn't make it easier for us who are going out to fill up. But for people who say, these are Joe Biden's, it's his high gas prices. This is happening around the world. And as Ed Hirsch pointed out, I believe in the recording we had with him, he said that this is because of the tightening demand, tightening supply rather, with Russia.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. That's why it's $11 a gallon in Hong Kong and Norway and Sweden and these other places.
And what
but
doesn't
it's still tough
feel,
here to swallow.
Yeah. And what doesn't feel good about that is that you can't necessarily, isolate the U.S. and just sort of work your way out of this problem, thinking that you're the only one with the problem. So the bad part about this is all around the world, and this is not going to change anytime real soon. So sorry about that bad news, especially as you're enjoying a holiday weekend here. Here's one thing, though, we want to bring up, and that is that we're getting really close to the midterms. We keep talking about that and, what gas prices, inflation, all that, how those are weigh on the midterms. Political season kicking into full gear here, Jason. We're already having the party state conventions, and Republicans just had one, and we're getting into that one next week in an interesting way.
Yeah, Democrats are having their state convention in Dallas coming up this month here. Republicans had theirs last month in Houston. And this is a rare discussion. Our guest even said, hey, this is a rare discussion you guys are having with me. Our guest for the next episode is a gay Republican leader, And he talks about what life is like in the GOP today and Donald Trump's Republican Party, whether he has any trouble or not, who he gets along with as far as, you know, talking ideology and policy, and what he thinks the party should be doing to improve itself. It's an interesting conversation. I know some gay Republicans. I've stayed in touch with him over the years, just covering politics. But this was really a good, candid conversation over a couple of Texas beers. And we really got to dig into to what life is like for him and the 4,000 or 5,000 others like him in the Republican Party of Texas right now.
Yeah. And, you know, Jason, I always think it's even more interesting when a guest we have on says, I haven't had this kind of conversation, you know, since I can remember. This is a rare conversation. You always know that that's going to be a good one. So we hope that you'll join us for that one next week. And we thank you for being here with us this week. And happy 4th, everybody.